Lecture 8, African American English.
In December 1996, the school board in Oakland, California passed a resolution affirming the legitimacy of many of its students' home language, African American English, sometimes called Ebonics. The resolution sparked a media firestorm as policymakers, journalists, and well-known African Americans spoke out against it. Some commented that passing the resolution would entail, quote, teaching down to our children. At best, critics viewed the Ebonics resolution as a well-intentioned but misguided attempt to help children whose academic skills were lagging behind those of other population groups. At worst, it was open season for thinly veiled racist jokes in the media. At the heart of all this negative commentary was misunderstanding. Misunderstanding of what the resolution was intended to accomplish, misunderstanding of the nature of the language systems associated with African Americans, and a fundamental misunderstanding of the nature of dialect variation. The Oakland School Board never intended for Ebonics to be taught. They meant for it to be recognized as a valid means of helping students master standard English. In addition, the school board referred to Ebonics as a language, and critics didn't like that. They insisted that African American English was just a dialect, in the non-linguistic sense of the term, a derivative form of a real language. Some went as far as to say that Ebonics is not really a legitimate language system at all. Journalist William Raspberry claimed that it has, quote, no right or wrong expressions, no consistent spellings or pronunciations, and no discernible rules, end quote. This pointed to the biggest problem of all. No matter what you call it, Ebonics or African American English, language or dialect, African American English is a legitimate language variety. Like all dialects, it does have right and wrong expressions, it is consistent, and it most definitely has discernible rules. Sociolinguists have been studying them for decades. In fact, African American English is by far the most studied variety of any language in the world. It's intricately patterned, richly expressive, and a crucial part of the linguistic and cultural heritage of African Americans, of the United States, and of the world. So just what is African American English? Given the profound misunderstanding surrounding this language variety, it's important that we're first clear on what it isn't. First, African American English is not slang. Yes, American English gets a lot of its slang terms, historical and current, from African American English, but slang is not the same thing as a full-fledged way of using language. Slang has to do with mostly the lexical level of language, with words, particularly informal ones, with special in-group meanings. Slang terms are most often used by young people, and they're mostly short-lived, though not all of them. The word cool, as it's often used today, comes from African American English. It's been around in its current sense since at least the 1920s, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. Usually, though, slang changes with the times and with the groups who use it. It's a kind of social lexical phenomenon. But African American English is much, much more than that. Its lexicon is distinctive and vast, comprising words for every possible occasion. Also, it's not just a matter of words. African American English also has distinctive pronunciation and grammatical features, as well as conversational styles, rhetorical and oratory styles, and literary genres. It's been around for generations. It's certainly not a short-lived lexical fad. Another thing African American English is not is hip-hop. Hip-hop language gets a lot of its features from African American English, but hip-hop language is at once both broader and narrower than African American English. It's broader in the sense that it's the language of the hip-hop culture, the hip-hop nation. This extends beyond ethnic and national boundaries to people around the globe, mostly young people, at least so far. And hip-hop language is narrower than African American English in the sense that African American culture comprises subcultures other than hip-hop, and African Americans use language varieties other than hip-hop language. Hip-hop culture and hip-hop language are associated with rapping, DJing, breakdancing, and graffiti art, with street culture. African American English is associated with African American culture in a much broader and more deeply historical sense. And finally, what African American English is not is broken English or bad grammar. there are rules for African-American English, just like there are for standard English. For example, you may be familiar with unconjugated be in a sentence like, she be working on weekends. What you may not know is that be is not just used across the board in African-American English or thrown in randomly or haphazardly. Instead, unconjugated be, or what linguists call invariant be, is reserved mostly to indicate one very specific type of meaning, habitual or recurring action. When it's used in this sense, it's called habitual be. In non-habitual contexts, be is conjugated or omitted. So, she be working on weekends means that she habitually or regularly works on the weekends. But if someone's working right now, then the form would be she's working today or she working today. Be is also typically conjugated or absent when indicating a permanent state or attribute, as in something like she nice or he funny. So, what African American English is a language variety, a full-fledged, rule-governed, intricately patterned linguistic system with distinctive features at all levels of language, lexical, phonological, grammatical, conversational, and beyond. It's been around for generations, and it's widespread among people of historic African descent in the U.S., of all ages and across geographic dialect regions. Linguistically speaking, it doesn't matter whether we call African American English a language or a dialect, but socially and politically speaking, it can matter a lot. There's public controversy over what to call African American English, and there's a lot of discussion among sociolinguists, too. Labels have changed over time, and they continue to vary. Sociolinguists tend to shy away from the term Ebonics because of its strong negative associations since the Oakland controversy of the 90s. Originally, the term was simply a blend of the words ebony and phonics, coined by American social psychologist Robert Williams in the 1970s. The terms African-American language and African-American English are more common among sociolinguists. You'll also hear the label African-American Vernacular English. I personally tend to use the term African-American English to encompass the full range of types of languages used by African-Americans, from formal standard English to varieties that differ greatly from general American English. I use the term African-American Vernacular English when I'm referring specifically to the linguistic usages that are most different from those associated with general or standard American English. Sociolinguists have so far mostly studied more vernacular varieties of African-American English, but there are standard, formal, yet still uniquely African-American ways of using language. So it's useful to be able to make a terminological distinction between African-American English, broadly speaking, and a narrowly defined African-American Vernacular English, or AAVE for short. Of course, the term vernacular can have negative connotations too, but not to linguists who use a term to refer to a legitimate language variety that's different from the socially accepted standard, or to refer to a person's first acquired native dialect or language. So as we proceed, I'll use the terms African-American English and African-American Vernacular English in their sociolinguistic senses. Sociolinguists also sometimes make a distinction between African-American English and African-American language. The former is focused on vocabulary, pronunciations, and sentence structures. The latter also encompasses ways of structuring conversations, delivering speeches and sermons, and producing and performing poetry, prose, and music lyrics. In this lesson, we'll focus mainly on lexicon, phonology, grammar. Our discussion will be organized in terms of three major issues in the sociolinguistic study of African-American English: the interrelation between African-American English and other American English dialects, the historical origins of African-American English, and differentiation within African-American English, the various African-American Englishes that comprise what might at first seem to be a single dialect. So, just how different is African-American English from other varieties of American English? At first, we might think it's pretty different. Let's listen to an African-American from Washington, D.C., where I live and work.
They take me places, but it was always Metro. Well, I tried to tell Richard, he said, get here at 4. I told him, I can't control Metro. I'd be out at my bus stop every day at 3. buses be passing me by, and I'm still standing there. And time I get here, it's like something to five, right? Sometimes the buses just be so jammed, and they have people standing it damn near in the mirror. They just go on past me, and I'd be like, I'm not standing on that bus. So I just stand and wait for the next one.
But not every D.C. area African-American sounds the same. How about this woman?
We had house parties. You know, we had occasional house parties. And just kind of hang out at each other's houses. You know, we would hang out. We would play records, like 45s. Mm-hmm. And we'd sing, and we'd pretend like we were the group singing. And we'd have dance steps, and we'd, you know, do that kind of thing. I used to love, believe it or not, going to the library. So I used to take the bus. I used to take the bus to Petworth Library and go up there. And I used to love to read these teenage romance novels. I'd get my books, and I'd hop right back down to home, and I'd read my books. And so sometimes I could convince a couple of my girlfriends to go up with me. And we'd hang out and be stupid at the library.
So some African Americans use a dialect that sounds pretty distinctive. Others don't. And even individuals can sound quite different depending who they're talking to and why. Even the more vernacular varieties of African American English share some features with other vernacular American dialects, especially those of the American South. For example, both AAVE and white Southern vernacular dialects have a zero form of to be called null copula. White Southern dialects tend to use the null copula mostly with plural subjects, as in they nice. In AAVE, it's used more widely with both singular and plural subjects. AAVE also shares pronunciation features with Southern white vernacular dialects. For example, a for I, as in something like rad for ride or man for mine. AAVE is also arless, as in father and mother for father and mother. Historically, the South in general was arless too, though nowadays the feature is fading away in most American dialects, but not African American English. While there are similarities between AAVE and other dialects, there's also some differences. Some features historically were shared but have since diverged. Some are found to a greater or lesser extent across dialects, like null copula, and others are unique to AAVE, like habitual B. There are also features that originated in AAVE but have now spread into general American English, including lots of lexical items, both slang terms like cool and hip, and enduring vocabulary like tote and cola. But a simple inventory of lexical items, pronunciation features, and grammatical structures doesn't really capture the full uniqueness of AAVE, or any dialect for that matter. Yes, dialects are composed of features, but features form systems. And like any other dialect, AAVE is highly systematic. In fact, in some ways, it's more intricately patterned than so-called standard American English. For example, languages systematically organize their verbs or action words in several ways. One is by tense, or when the described action takes place, past, present, or future. In English, verb tenses are indicated with different grammatical markers. I walked, I'm walking, I will walk. Verbs can also be organized according to how the action takes place, what's known as verb aspect. In most forms of English, there are a few markers of aspect. For example, we use progressive forms like is walking to indicate continuing action, and participle forms to indicate that the action is or has been finished. He has walked, he had walked. That's about it. The grammar of African American English marks aspect much more explicitly. We've already talked about one example, invariant B, which marks habitual aspect. AAVE also marks intensity with the aspectual marker steady, as in he steady working, which means something like he just keeps on working. There's also a marker of indignation, come, in something like he come talking that nonsense. And there's a marker of so-called resultative aspect, be done. This one's a bit complicated. It occurs in sentences like this one, recorded by sociolinguist Elizabeth Dayton a couple decades ago. And here's the sentence. If you love your enemy, they be done ate you alive in this society. Essentially, this means that if you love your enemy, the result will most definitely be that they'll eat you alive, no question. Subtle markers can also show differing degrees of passedness and completedness. He done finished his homework or he done did his homework is more final than he finished his homework. And when the verb form been is stressed, it's no longer a past participle form, like in standard English, but takes on an aspectual meaning, indicating that an action took place a long time ago, or that a particular state has been the case for some time. So in AAVE, a sentence like, I been bought this jacket, means that I bought the jacket a long time ago. A sentence like, I been married, is a bit more complicated. It means, I got married a long time ago and I'm still married. So, kind of the opposite of the general English meaning, I used to be married, but I'm not anymore. So, AAVE has a more intricate verb tense and aspect system than standard English. It's also more systematic in terms of subject-verb agreement. If you think about it, as revered as standard English may be, it has some glitches. One of these is in the agreement system for regular verbs. So, I go, you go, he goes, we go, y'all go, they go. Did you catch it? Everything is nice and neat until we get to the third person singular, he goes. This is the only person in number that takes an S ending. So it's he goes, not he go. This rather strange system is the historical remnant of a more highly developed agreement system involving different endings for all persons and numbers. In AAVE, the irregularity is leveled out. I go, you go, she go, we go, y'all go, they go. So while it may seem ungrammatical to say he go, it actually makes a lot of sense, systematically and historically. It's just one last step in the historic process of simplifying subject-verb agreement in English. The verb to be, which is highly irregular in standard English, is also more systematic in AAVE in the past tense. Instead of I was, you were, she was, we were, y'all were, they were, speakers of AAVE often use was across the board. I was, you was, he was, we was, y'all was, they was. Again, this might seem ungrammatical, but it's really just more regular. And no meaning is lost. It's all there in the subject pronouns, so we don't actually need the different verb forms. The grammar of AAVE is systematic and intricate. So are the pronunciation patterns. R-lessness has rules, just like in Boston English or proper British English. The R sound can only be dropped in certain word positions, not everywhere. So mother for mother and ka for car, but not it for right or bing for bring. Pronunciations are also governed by unconscious rules. For example, in AAVE, the I vowel is often pronounced as a, but not everywhere. The A pronunciation is far more common before certain consonants, M, N, D, and Z, than before T and S. So we're likely to hear tam, man, rad, and raz, but not rat for right or ras for rice. There are some southern white dialects where you do get A for I across the board, but the more subtle pattern persists in AAVE. So how did African American English develop its unique character? Its historical origins and development have long been controversial topics in linguistic circles. As you can imagine, there isn't much evidence for what its formative stages would have been like. Slavery, repression, segregation, and devaluation silenced a lot of voices in early America. But there are theories, essentially four schools of thought on the development of African American English, the Creolist, Anglicist, Neo-Anglicist, and substrate positions. The Creolist view holds that African-American English began life as a Creole. A Creole is a type of language, not the name of a particular language. Creole languages arise from contact between two or more different languages, usually in situations of unequal power. But they're not simple mixes of the various languages. Usually, the vocabulary of a Creole comes mostly from the powerful language in the mix, called the superstrate language. But the grammar is something different. When languages are brought into sudden contact, and people need to quickly figure out how to communicate with each other, the linguistic structures of the different languages get reduced to their simplest forms. Just like we all do when we need to make ourselves understood in a language we don't know that well. Have you ever noticed how your verb forms go haywire or go missing when you're struggling just to find the right basic vocabulary? I know I have. In the US, when I order a drink, I'll say something like, I'd like a glass of wine, please. But in Italian, I'm not sure what the appropriate polite form of the verb would be. So I usually just say, vino per favore, wine please, something I really wouldn't do in my native language. Now, when language contact is sustained, the grammar begins to grow more complex again, and the result is essentially a new grammatical system. It's different from the grammatical systems of any of the original contact languages, but it's a full-fledged system. It can now be used in a full range of situations, not just for basic business purposes. And children acquire it as their first language and further solidify its unconscious rules. According to the Creolist view, the radical language contact situation between slaves and masters in early America led to the formation of a Creole language. Not only were incoming slaves confronted with English, but they had to figure out how to communicate with one another, since they brought many different West African languages with them. The new Creole language had an essentially English vocabulary, but the grammar was far from English-like. Over time, the grammar of African American English became a lot more like English, but some Creole elements remain to this day. Linguists who uphold the Creolist view point out that African American vernacular English shares features with a number of well-known Creole languages, like Creole in Sierra Leone. These features include null copula, as in she workin' or she nice, and also the non-use of grammatical suffixes like S endings, as in he drive to school, I lent him $20, or that's Natalie jacket, for that's Natalie's jacket. The Anglicist view holds that African American English was formed just like any other American English dialect, from a mix of different English dialects. Today's AAVE is distinctive because it preserves some British dialect features that were lost in other American English dialects. For example, some sociolinguists maintain that the habitual B form comes from British dialects that historically used unconjugated B in a similar way, for example, Irish English. Some vernacular forms of African American English also preserve older English pronunciations. One pronunciation that's particularly noticeable and looked down on is axe for ask. But it's not a mistake. It's a retention from Old English, the English of the British Isles before William the Conqueror got there in 1066. The Neo-Anglicist position grew out of the Anglicist view. It holds that, yes, AAVE retains linguistic usages that set it apart, but it's also added distinctions that make it even more different from other dialects of American English than it used to be. And it's added them quite recently, too. The use of habitual B seems to have increased dramatically in the 20th century. Another newer feature is the use of had with a past tense verb to indicate past tense, not past perfect. An example sentence would be, yesterday I had went to the dialect lecture. This means I went, one single action, not I had gone before some prior action took place. Finally, we have the substrate hypothesis on the origins of African American English. According to this view, African American English was heavily influenced by dialects of British origin during the course of its development. At the same time, it's always been influenced by a substrate, by underlying linguistic features that stem from the West African languages in the original linguistic mix. The substrate may or may not have been associated with a full-fledged Creole language. Given the sparse evidence that we have, it's just not possible to know. In my view, the substrate hypothesis is a useful compromise between the Creolist and Anglicist views. It doesn't demand irrefutable evidence that the language of slaves in America was once a full-fledged Creole, which so far we haven't found. At the same time, it doesn't discount the Creole-like features that are still found in today's African-American vernacular English. Nor does it downplay the inevitable influence of British dialects on early African American English. The substrate view also accommodates 20th and 21st century developments in African American English. In many ways, AAVE is getting more distinct from other dialects, but some of the essential differences were there from the outset. For example, he nice for he's nice. In some ways, it doesn't really matter whether African American English started out as a Creole language or as a dialect of English. No matter how it began, it's grown into an intricately patterned and culturally invaluable language variety. But in other ways, uncovering its true origins could help elevate its status in the eyes of people who think it doesn't quite measure up. And these include many people whose home language or heritage language actually is AAE, but who've internalized the negative evaluations that wider society has placed on African American English. Sociolinguists do agree that the unique historical position of people of African descent in the U.S. led to the formation of a unique dialect. Both language and dialect contact played key roles in its development. Persistent segregation helped sustain its unique character, and so did people's strong positive sense of African American cultural identity. It's no coincidence that some of the most distinctive features of African American English arose or were heightened during the Civil Rights Movement and in the following decades. And as with any other large language variety, there are also important differences within African American English, both in terms of its linguistic features and the people who use them. Remember, no one's linguistic usages are shaped by ethnicity alone. Every component of our demographic makeup impacts how we use language: region, social class, gender, age, and so on. There are regional differences in African American English, sometimes even from one city to the next. For example, African Americans from Philadelphia are far more R pronouncing than African Americans in New York City. In St. Louis and Washington, D.C., African American English speakers say her for here, cur for care, and curry for carry. And in the San Francisco Bay Area, a noticeable regional AAVE feature is the pronunciation of man as Maine. Other differences within African American English relate to socioeconomic status or class orientation. As with any dialect, working class people use language differently than people in middle and upper class groups. The features of African American vernacular English are most concentrated in the working classes, including stigmatized non-standard features. Again, and I can't say this often enough, the stigma has nothing to do with the dialect itself. We've just seen how intricate AAVE is, how it's even richer in meaning in some ways than standard American English. The stigma attached to AAVE comes from the historic negative evaluation of the people it's associated with. A sad fact, but it's true. It's also true that sociolinguists still don't know as much as we'd like about African American English across the whole social class spectrum. Middle class African Americans don't tend to use stigmatized features like habitual be or he drive for he drives. But just because they're not using a highly vernacular form of African American English doesn't mean they're not using African American English. There are middle class versions of this dialect, just like there's a middle class Southern English and a middle class Boston English. One feature that's been suggested as a more middle class feature of African American English is the pronunciation of words like cab, bed, and bag as cap, bet, and back, a feature linguists call final consonant devoicing. It's a systematic pattern, but like most pronunciation features, it tends to fly below the radar of English teachers and grammarians. It's grammatical features, like invariant B, that take the heat. A third important dimension of variation within African American English is interpersonal and intrapersonal variation. African American English is at once highly stigmatized and a highly valued component of cultural identity. And so African Americans of all walks of life have learned to be adept at shifting between AAE and general American English, a process called code switching. And let's keep in mind that ethnic dialect use and ethnic group belonging are often intertwined, but this doesn't mean they're completely coextensive. Not every African American uses African American English, and not everyone who uses African American English is African American. Remember, there's nothing biological about linguistic usages. It's a matter of upbringing and of identity. If you grow up among African American English speakers and identify with African American culture, you'll probably use African American English, no matter what your genealogical origins. If you're surrounded by different linguistic and cultural influences, you'll use a different dialect. It's also a matter of whether you have negative or positive associations with African American English. If it means home and family to you, you're more likely to use it than if you buy into the uninformed notion that African American English is bad English or broken English. And lots of people use certain features of African American English because the features are seen as cool In fact, rap artists the world over use features like A for I and R-lessness, even when they're not rapping in English. So again, in thinking about ethnic dialects like African American English, it's often more useful to think about ethnolinguistic repertoire than ethnic dialects per se. It's not so much that people either have or don't have a particular dialect. Instead, each individual draws on linguistic features from various sources and combines them in different ways to suit their personal needs and the situation at hand. Even though groups of people may share particular linguistic usages, this doesn't mean that each group member speaks, writes, texts, or raps in exactly the same way. Still, group dialects are real to those who hear them and to those who use them, and they can be a vital part of who we are. African American English is particularly rich in this regard. It's a part of African American culture, and it's a key ingredient in American English for Americans of all ethnic origins. As the African American writer James Baldwin once observed, "Now, I do not know what white Americans would sound like if there had never been any black people in the United States, but they would not sound the way they sound." Baldwin is definitely right, and when you think about it, that's pretty cool.